Welcome to the Standard Deviations Podcast, presented by Orion Advisor Solutions and hosted by Dr. Daniel Crosby, Orion's Chief Behavioral Officer and New York Times best-selling author. Each week, Dr. Crosby interviews a fascinating new guest on a range of compelling topics, from literature to psychology to financial wellness. To learn more about Dr. Crosby's behavioral finance work at Orion, visit www.orion.com.
Hello and welcome to the Standard Deviations Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Daniel Crosby. I am joined today by the CEO of BizEquity, Mike Carter, but he's here today less in his capacity as a chief executive officer and more in his capacity as co-author of the recent book, The Mission Corporation, How Contemporary Capitalism Can Change the World One Business at a Time. Mike, welcome.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, Mike, I gotta compliment you first and foremost on your blurb game. I'm going through your book and I'm looking at the people who blurbed your book. You've got the CEO, former CEO of Starbucks. You've got the CEO of Nike. You've got NFL Hall of Famers. I've got, like, you know, my neighbor and my mom and my buddies blurbing my books, and you've got the big guns out. So, congrats there.
Oh, thanks, Dan. I wish I could take more credit for it. Most of those, 80% of those, came from my co-author, Michael Mo, who's out in Silicon Valley and had a lot of those relationships. So that was incredible to get the support that we got from those folks who didn't just kind of lend quotes, but really helped dig into the book and, you know, read the majority of the book and be before anybody else, and really lent their, you know, names to it based upon, I think, their true feelings for what the book touches upon.
Well, that is an incredible get. And yes, you could tell from reading them that they were absolutely genuine. So congratulations on the success of the book and getting such heavy hitters behind it early on. Okay, so I'm going to jump right in, and we're going to start with a tough question.
Yeah, totally.
We're at a moment of unprecedented wealth inequality. You know, coronavirus has made wealth inequality that much worse. I am coming to you from the very epicenter of wealth inequality in the United States. Atlanta has the biggest gap between rich and poor in the whole country. So this is a time when politically capitalism is sort of coming under fire, coming under the microscope a bit. And you've written a book that talks about the power of capitalism to bring about real change. Why do you think that capitalism is the answer when so many politicians and others are suggesting that it seems to be the problem?
Yeah, no, great point. I guess to the question, what we're really saying is, yes, right, there is this gross inequality or inequity that's happened with capitalism really the last 20 or 30 years. But no, the answer is not socialism. Socialism, as my co-author says, is 0 for 43, I believe, with the different countries that have used socialism as the answer. And so what this book really is a third way, which is, you know, capitalism is the greatest economic system the world's ever known, but it can improve. So I think what's happened, and, you know, part of this, Dan, as we'll talk about later, right, some of this is not, you know, to true market theorists or traders, financial traders, you know, they might scoff at some of these ideas, which is our view is strict interpretation of capitalism and strict interpretation of the invisible hand clearly isn't working for that divide that you mentioned. So for capitalism to work, there needs to be a middle class. And unfortunately, the way I think a few folks have hijacked capitalism and popularized capitalism is kind of the next coming of the robber barons, really. And what we're really saying is capitalism can be the answer depending upon how entrepreneurs build their companies and what we're calling the Mission Corporation.
Well, let's talk about the invisible hand, right? You mentioned Adam Smith a lot in the book. Tell us about what you found out about him and how he shaped this book. As a quick aside, Adam Smith, also the original behavioral economist. I mean, he anticipated so much of what we only codified in like the 1970s. So an incredible behavioral thinker and someone who shaped your thinking a lot as well. So talk to me about Adam Smith.
Yeah, no, definitely. And so first off, we were incredibly blessed to have an editor from Rethink Press, who I believe had her doctorate in economic philosophy and theory and studied Adam Smith intensely. So what Michael Moe and I, in reading The Theory of Moral Sentiments, which we'll talk about in a minute, as well as Wealth of Nations, thought we knew about Adam Smith. We were so blessed to have Victoria on the team. That really educated us and ensured that what we were saying was obviously accurate and thorough. So let me just take that off the table at the first bit. So what we found is, you know, Adam Smith, you know, to your point is famous for really being the father of modern capitalism. And through his book, The Wealth of Nations, which published the same year that we got our independence in the United States, 1776, and really, you know, is who many people quote around the invisible hand around the market. But what few people know is prior to his seminal work, right, The Wealth of Nations, he wrote a book called The Theory of Moral Sentiments. And that was published roughly 12 years prior. And in that book, he really talks about purpose and morality and, you know, how that should be kind of the guide to people's enterprises or enterprising hands, so on and so forth. So what we kind of found is, if you think about it, and we say this in page 15 of the book, that what we're really saying about contemporary capitalism through the Mission Corporation is really the marriage of this idea of what Adam Smith popularized with The Wealth of Nations, as well as his underpinnings of morality with the theory of moral sentiments. Meaning, yes, right, a free market economy, if distributed appropriately and if everything is working, right, the beauty thing is not a scarcity principle, it's infinite, right? Assuming that it gets distributed. And it gets distributed, we feel, by folks doing the right thing and making their companies truly missions. And that's an idea that we think you could really take from the theory of moral sentiments in terms of taking the string that it kind of starts and weaving it together. So that's what kind of our view of, we looked at Adam Smith and, you know, who he was influenced by, Benjamin Franklin, Hume, and others, his first real work with the theory of moral sentiments, and we applied it to the Wealth of Nations and this idea of the invisible hand and the free market and all the things that folks know, kind of the headline and the sub-headline across the world in terms of Adam Smith and capitalism.
So folks are going to get the dose of behavioral finance that I talked about in that very same book. Again, more famous for The Wealth of Nations, of course, but The Theory of Moral Sentiments is where you can get the great stuff Mike's talking about, as well as the behavioral finance goods. So definitely check out that lesser known work. So Mike, you know, one of the things that I think appeals to folks about sort of what I don't know what we want to call it, old school capitalism, traditional capitalism, is that it can really be quantified fairly easily. You know, sort of the famous line is that businesses, you know, corporations exist to maximize shareholder value. So if that is sort of the marching orders or the mantra of old school capitalism, how would you sort of encapsulate this mission-driven third way that you're talking about?
Totally. And you look at other movements that have been out there, not movements, other books, whether it's Mackey, the founder of Whole Foods book, right, around conscious capitalism, which is an incredible read, and he's an incredible entrepreneur, and empirical research that exists from many of the leading institutions. It's amazing because guess what, Daniel? The answer is, purpose-driven or mission-driven companies outperform non-mission-driven companies in the sense of their valuation, right? In terms of their enterprise value. So to tie it back to biz equity, for me, this was really like a holistic study because we're not just being Pollyanna-ish about, hey, your company should be a mission and make a mission corporation, which we'll dig into in a little bit. We're saying not only is it, you know, doing good, but it's good for business because companies that are purpose-driven, right, and or mission-led have developed larger moats around their business and in doing so have greater enterprise value. So we're going to be launching an institute called the Mission Institute, where we're going to have a lot of that secondary empirical research that shows that. We're going to conduct primary research that shows it as well, both public and private companies, to really put wood behind the arrow here in terms of why being a mission corporation and flying the flag isn't just a nice thing to do, but it just makes business sense too.
So I'm going to space, perhaps you know, perhaps you don't, that there is a slide that I know I've used in presentations before that compares the returns of the S&P 500 over the last decade, right? So of the early aughts, 2000 to 2010 was the first 10-year period in S&P history where it had a negative nominal return over that decade. But if you compare it to the mission-driven companies, there's some sort of index of mission-driven companies. And I mean, it was, you know, big time up and to the right. It was enormously successful over the period when the largest companies in the country were doing poorly. What specifically, without giving away the whole book, what specifically is the mechanics of this? What is it about having sort of flying under this banner that brings about better business outcomes?
Yeah. So what we're saying is it's not just nice words, right? And you know, if somebody listened to the first 10 minutes of this interview and I'm talking about mission corporations at a high level, I understand why some people would say, okay, you know, it sounds interesting. It sounds like benefit corporations or B Corps. Cool, nice, you know, so on and so forth. But what we're really doing, which is so unique, is we have these 7 declarations. So our website's the Mission Corps, like the way you spell Peace Corps, CORPS.org. So the Mission Corps.org. And we take, a company founder or an investor through these 7 declarations that a company has to employ in their business. And I'll just give you a few, Daniel, to your point. One is a 10% employee option pool, you know, at some either the seed round or the Series A of the company. So in other words, the company establishes 10% of the equity of the company for all stakeholders, including their team members. And, you know, that helps create an environment of ownership, right? Of feeling part of the mission, of hopefully building this middle class again through, you know, proper capitalism. 2 is, you know, a commitment to a merit-based culture. You know, there's a true meritocracy. So there's strong ethos and mission, but, you know, there's performance and there's companies that the company, if you're a mission corporation, will spend money. I believe it's $1,000 annually per employee on educating that employee on skills that they feel that they need to do their job or enhance their career greater. 3 is there's a mission beyond dollars and cents in terms of what they're doing with their business. For instance, you know, all the amazing work, Daniel, you've done in terms of being the best-selling author and studying behavioral finance and, you know, what you're doing now with Brinker and Orion, you're looking to democratize, in a sense, behavioral finance to help people understand how their maybe non-logical thoughts, right, impact their, you know, financial performance or making better financial decisions for financial wellness, which is such a buzzword, right? The whole concept of wellness. And you're doing that through behavioral finance. Likewise, at BizEquity, we've done that with democratizing this really important knowledge that we believe every private business owner in the world needs to know, which is what their business is worth. And why we started the company was the fact that we didn't think it was fair that the biggest companies in the world could afford a business valuation or an investment banker would give it to them for free to get their banking business to take them public or raise a huge Series D or E or F round, but a finance of capital. But if you are a private company in middle America, really suffering from this horrible pandemic, you know, no one's going to give you a free valuation. And what we were able to do was make it 1/100th as expensive as a traditional valuation, and have somebody be able to go online and do it and or through their advisor for free. So when we began the journey, that was really important to me. Like, I didn't necessarily know how we were going to make money, to be honest with you. I had an idea, but I didn't spend my time the first 6 months in creating the company thinking about all the money we were going to make and our business model. I spent time thinking, okay, what problem are we going to solve? Why it's important? You know, what's the purpose of what we're doing? Why is the purpose so much, bigger than all this? Because if you get the purpose right, and you get a great product that fits a huge purpose and need and mission that people want, the success is going to follow. And in the book, we talk about, you know, people in our lives that have changed us, Michael Moe and I, and for him, it was Bill Campbell, the chairman, CEO, founder, former chairman and CEO of Intuit and board member of Apple and Google. And for me, it was Pete Musser, who was my mentor, founder of Safeguard Scientifics and over 500 companies, including Comcast and QVC, which he was the founding investor of. And Miles Frost, who became a close friend, who was our first institutional investor in biz equity. And the other thing was the books we've read. And one of those books was Kyocera's founder, Inomori from Japan, wrote an amazing book called A Passion for Success. And he talks about this idea that in order to be, you know, truly successful in your business, there has to be a purpose motive beyond a profit motive. And as you've talked about, just on this podcast, you know, the numbers are out there in terms of why purpose-driven companies or mission-driven companies are performing better. But for me, you know, it was an important ethos to have from my own experience in building biz equity. So that's why.
So Mike, I love everything you're doing, because what you're doing, I think, is you're taking something that I think a lot of people believe. I certainly believe it, that mission-driven companies do better, and that people, that organizations that treat people well and invest in their people do better. And I love what you and the other Michael have done in sort of codifying what particularly this looks like, because I think, you know, as someone who talks about and thinks about and writes about purpose and living with purpose a lot, one of the defining struggles for me is always getting my arms around what that looks like. And I think you've done a fantastic job of codifying that in this book. But there's a skeptical piece of me too that thinks back to Enron, right? And Enron famously had these almost like Ten Commandments-esque pillars up in front of their corporate office with their corporate values etched in stone. And I mean, it was things like honesty and transparency and open communication, like literally etched in stone. So in an era when I think folks are increasingly understanding that this matters to consumers, how do we keep people from snowing us? How do we keep evil corporations who are sort of retrofitting a purpose onto evil intent? How do we separate the sheep from the wolves, if you will, when so many people are saying the right things about mission corporations?
Totally. I think it's words and deeds. Daniel, you just said it. Like, it's one thing to have, you know, those posters that I think everybody's who was in business in the 70s and 80s, their pictures in the movies or in the 90s where they talk about culture and teamwork and it's not, you know, and it's framed on a wall.
Yeah.
That's so much different than deeds. And when we mean deeds, we mean actions. So that's what was so important for Michael and I in this book, to have seven declarations. So actions that companies sign up for, that only if they do all seven are they truly mission corporations. And so I think separating the deeds and from the actions. The other side is, you know, what's pretty interesting is the CFO of Enron, right? One of the things he was trained upon was kind of, to your point, the Milton Friedman, the purpose of business is profit, nothing else. And I believe his business school that he went to, that was the underlying belief. So probably if you asked him, he would say, oh, I didn't do anything wrong, where obviously we know that, you know, it spiraled out of control and so on and so forth. But I wouldn't say that Enron's actions or deeds foot it to those words probably on the wall that they had.
Yeah, no, that's I think a wise word, something to keep in mind. Now, there are other sort of types of enlightened capitalism, right? You mentioned yourself, the Whole Foods CEO and his vision of conscious capitalism. What was the niche that you were trying to fill? How is your thrust here different than what's already been written about impact investing and ESG and conscious capitalism? Where is this mission-driven capitalism different?
Totally. So how we, just like kind of some background on this, Dan, is so Michael was on my board at Biz Equity, Michael Moe, and we've been friends for over 20 years. And, you know, we were both capitalists, you would say, right? And similar political beliefs and everything. and economic beliefs and everything. But we thought, you know, wait a minute, you know, what we were seeing in our own companies from people that, you know, we were around, investors and other things, that something changed the last 20 years. And the capitalism today isn't the same capitalism kind of we read about or grew up with or early in our careers. And so we started putting pen to paper really right before, right at the beginning of COVID. And while we were doing it, to your point, all of a sudden, there was all these interesting books coming out, which on purpose, right, I didn't read until we were completed this, because I wanted to, you know, make sure that all of our thoughts were authentic around it. And I read Conscious Capitalism by Mackey just a few weeks ago. And I think his idea is in line with our concept of contemporary capitalism, right? I'd say it's on par. I think what's different is the Mission Corporation is the first book, and I think the first hopeful movement, where it's not just talking about where capitalism can get better, right? But it's actually creating a roadmap to say, here are the seven things you can do, Mr. or Mrs. Business Owner, or entrepreneur, to truly be a mission corporation and to catapult your business and, you know, make it succeed and hopefully, and, you know, attract investors and so on and so forth. Your second part of your question. So right now there's this idea of certified B Corps or benefit corporations, and there's such a rush to them because of this whole ESG movement, as you see in the capital markets with ESG being so hot. Michael quotes the fact that I think over 50% of all new funds or capital deployed, something like the last 18 months, have been for ESG funds or businesses. And so when you typically think of ESG, right, you think of, obviously, right, environmental and sustainability movements. And I think what's different about this is it's like, no, you're not just a better steward of your business by being green. This is about being good, right? So I would say ESG and benefit corporations is kind of about being green. And this is like really about being good. And what we really think is, you know, you're going to have pools of mission capital out there, which will either be a large swath of the ESG movement or its own movement. And mission corporations fit that, right? Versus just the environmental and sustainable bits, which is obviously huge and very popular and sexy right now. And that's where kind of the benefit corps like fit. Whereas mission corps really fit into this broader idea beyond being green, about being good as a business and being, you know, a conscious capitalist or being a contemporary capitalist, if that makes sense. And, you know, we have actions. It's not just words. So it's not just saying, changing a word in your corporate documents to say stakeholders instead of shareholders, which I believe B Corps do. We say, you know, here are the seven actions that you have to take.
Well, I think, you know, I'm a big believer in the potential of ESG and especially impact investing, but I get frustrated at the ham-handed way in which I see it applied sometimes. You know, there was a vegan fund out recently, which, you know, just ended up being a lot of tech stocks, like just look kind of like the NASDAQ, and you're like, okay, like, so the vegan fund is Facebook and Microsoft. Like, yeah, I mean, I guess they didn't kill any animals, you know? So it's, I think sometimes it's been more of a marketing push and less of sort of a holistic heart-led meaningful push. And so again, I think definitions matter. And so I think that's what's so great about this book is that you and the other Michael have taken the time to define this, to codify it in a meaningful way, and to hold people to these actions. You know, to that point, Mike, will there be an M Corp? I mean, will that become a certification in the same way that a B Corp is a certification?
Yeah, I think so. And like, Daniel, one of the things too, just like we didn't want to like read the recently published books that could be in our space and pull a name a famous politician. I'm sure there's a few, and we wanted to make sure we didn't take any of their ideas and make them our own. You know, similarly with the whole kind of you know, M Corp movement, we didn't want to do is say, this is how we're going to make money on this. This is really, you know, I'm founder, CEO of BizEquity, part of American City Business Journals and Advance Media. Michael is CEO of GSV Asset Management and the GSV companies, and just done, I believe, two SPACs onto his third SPAC. Like, we weren't looking at this to be like, oh, let's profit and certify M Corps and have a business there. We're like, no, this is a movement. It has to happen. Capitalism's gone off the rails. It's been hijacked a little bit. There's a third way, which is just a better form of capitalism. It's not socialism. It's capitalism with these tweaks. Let's go. But the reaction that we've gotten, you know, yeah, I think we'll find a way, you know, almost a nonprofit basis to certify M Corps, and how it really clicks, Dan, and the end game for us, I think, and how we really get change here is the role of government or taxes or tax systems that I think we can all agree on is the fact that you can't just use taxes, I believe, to penalize profits or to penalize success. I think you have to use taxes in the form of capital gains and corporate taxes to also incentivize change. And so what I would love, and Michael, I believe, would love to happen, is to help lobby, regardless, Democrat, Republican, this idea of a lower capital gains tax treatment for entrepreneurs that are M Corps or mission corporations, because they've given 10% of the employee stock, they've given 10% of the company to employee stock option pools. They've donated 3% of time, 2% of net income, 1% of revenue and or stock to really important causes. They have a diverse board. They've have a meritocracy-based culture. They're investing in the education of their team members. They care about their communities and their stakeholders. And my belief is if government, right, through tax policies, would put in a mission corporation incentive, which, let's just say, would lower the capital gains tax treatment to 10% versus the 20, soon to be, you know, I'm sure 30%, 25 or 30% in the next 24 months. Like, why? Idea being, if you're an entrepreneur, you build a company, you've created jobs, you've done things the right way, you're trying to share, to spread the wealth in your company through your innovation, why should you be taxed the same way as somebody who didn't take that risk, that might be a high income earning person who's not employing folks? I don't think that's fair. So I think how mission corps really take off, and if government really want to inspire change, I think they're going to have to do it. And if you look, you know, past, and I talked to some of my like ultra progressive friends, you know, I wouldn't say that I'm a progressive by any means, but when I love their thoughts and their opinions, and they talk about this universal, I think it's called, what is it, universal basic income?
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, they make good points in the sense of, hey, Mike, like 30 years from now, 40 years from now, you know, the robotics and technology and the number of jobs that are going to leave transportation with self-driving cars, there's going to be this need for universal basic income. You know, I can get there mentally, I guess, and understand it. And so if you see all these things happening, the only way to really ensure capitalism succeeds the next 250 years and doesn't get hijacked into become socialism, I think, is to put in measures like this, and is for the government to get behind it, to help shine a light on what's working and to incentivize entrepreneurs to build their businesses, quote unquote, the right way, which we believe is a mission corporation.
Yeah, well, if there's one thing we know about shaping behavior, it's that incentives work. And so to the extent that we could provide policies or tax schemes that were beneficial to companies who are doing the right things by their people, I think you'd see an enormous adoption of this. And it's good to hear that you're taking your own medicine there and that you're leading with the mission. You see where the vision and the mission takes you. And then if a movement builds up behind it, then that's one thing. But I think you're going about it just the right way. So final sort of tough question here. You've talked about the returns sort of historically that have accrued to mission-driven organizations. There's really two camps, I think, when it comes to the way that people talk about enlightened capitalism from a returns perspective, right? One group that says that paying attention to things like mission-driven metrics, some of the mission-driven metrics you're talking about, is a way to improve performance, right? That progressive forward-looking, intentional, meaningful companies are going to do better than those who were sort of mired in the past. And then another group says that, look, anytime you're limiting your universe of investable options, right? If you're screening out some subset of the total universe, you should expect to do worse. Which camp do you fall into? Do you expect that mission-driven companies would achieve sort of market-like returns, better, worse? Where do we think we land with this, just from a dollars and cents perspective?
No, great question. And you know, it's obviously, you know, more your wheelhouse from a market strategist perspective with your amazing background. But I would say this: we don't look at it, Michael and I, in terms of quarterly returns, because no doubt, you know, with the profit motive and a strict kind of Friedman philosophy, short-term quarterly perspective, I am sure it'll be a horse race between non-mission-based companies and, you know, historical companies. What we're really talking about when we talk about returns, Daniel, is the enterprise value of the business over, right, its lifetime. So I would still say, you know, I'd probably be in camp one, but I would kind of change the argument a bit and say, you know, what we're trying to build is, you know, the businesses with the biggest motor, largest moat around them, businesses with the biggest market cap, businesses with the right largest and most expansive enterprise value are created this way, not necessarily, you know, the 2-week moving average for a particular business. Because I think also this whole short-termism that we have as a country and as a culture, and as from a market perspective, has probably been the accelerant or the propane on this tank of form of capitalism that we hope to improve upon, right? And so it kind of helps propel our argument for, you know, creating companies that truly last and that have the that are worth more.
Well, Mike, you and Michael have put something really tremendous together. Sort of my final seal of approval here. I don't think my listeners will know this. I am actually writing a book myself. I don't know any other way to say it. It's kind of about the meaning of life, right? Because one of the things.
Oh my God, I love this. You didn't tell me this.
You heard it here first, Mike, and the rest of you. But you know, one of the things that I believe, one of the things that I've long observed about the human condition, is the thing that Nietzsche quoted and that Viktor Frankl recited to keep himself afloat in the most horrible circumstances of all. It's that, you know, he or she who has a why to live can bear with almost any how, right?
Totally.
We see again and again, whether it's in business, whether it's in our personal lives, that if we're striving for something transcendent, if we're working for something bigger than ourselves, bigger than money, that things tend to go well. So I have to give you, as a pseudo journalist, I have to ask tough questions. But I, at the end of the day, I'm absolutely on board with
the purpose. What is it, too, Dan? Right, the purpose of life is to find your purpose.
Yeah. And absolutely.
The mission of your life is to find your mission, right?
Absolutely. So thank you for the work that you've done in helping to guide people to their mission. And here's hoping that the future of capitalism looks a lot like you've written about it in your book. So, Mike, if people want to find out more about you, about Biz Equity, about the book, where's the best place to track you down?
Yeah, totally. So themissioncore.org. So www.themissioncore.org. LinkedIn, Michael Carter. You'll see a bunch of posts, I think, about the book, thankfully. And then Biz Equity, obviously, the company that I'm CEO of.
Okay, perfect. Mike Carter, thank you again for joining us today.
Thank you, Daniel. I'm giving you a namaste bow.
Thanks for tuning in to Standard Deviations. If you can't wait till next week for more behavioral finance insights, visit www.orion.com. All opinions expressed by Dr. Daniel Crosby and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of or endorsement by Orion and its affiliates, subsidiaries, and employees. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for legal, tax, and investment decisions. The opinions are based upon information the participants consider reliable.